Today, I'm with the Director of Flight Operations at ProFlight Zambia, Captain Josias Waluita. Super excited. You'll see some articles on him in the Inkwazi magazine. And we're here today to learn much more about him, a little bit more about ProFlight, and about maybe even your experiences on ProFlight. Thank you so much for being here today.
Hi, Chana. It's a pleasure being on this platform. I'm delighted and yeah. I can't wait to share my story. And I'm sure the listeners will find this exciting.
And your story is that, you know, you were a pilot and of course grew to this amazing position of being the Director of Flight Operations, which is not an easy job. How did that come to fruition?
So initially, you know, the target was just to be a normal line pilot, but eventually, after flying for a couple of years at ProFlight, they did recognize the fact that, you know, this young man had some potential of being in management.
Yes.
So eventually I was approached and asked whether I would have an interest in being in the admin side of things. I mean, initially, I was quite skeptical at the idea of, you know, going into operations, because it is quite a painstaking job.
Absolutely.
You have to be meticulous. You have to know your job. You have to be good at what you do.
But you've had 20 years experience. So surely it made sense, like, okay, you understand the front and the back end of
Indeed.
The business. Yeah.
Indeed. And personally, I took it as a challenge. I said, well, this is something that I can do, because now I can bring that operational experience Absolutely. Into the office. But moving into the office, I did realize that, you know, this required a different kind of approach to just being a pilot. Mm. It did actually open up new avenues in terms of starting some university studying and all that, which further gave me the proper tools and skills, you know, to be a good manager in the office.
Did you grow up wanting to be a pilot?
I did.
Was it your dream?
My affinity with aviation began at a very tender age.
Yes.
I was in grade one. It's a funny story, but I will share it anyway.
Yeah.
So in grade one, we had this opportunity of, you know, like getting some books from the library. And then, you know, obviously in grade one, you're not very tall. And the shelf I was looking at had a book on aviation. And the title of the book was How an Airplane Works. And I thought, oh, that's a nice book. So I pulled it off the shelf and that was it. I haven't looked back since, and I started getting more books on aviation. But the funny side of the story was I kept getting the same book from the library, and two of the librarians said, listen, young man, the goal is to read as many different books as possible and not the same book. But that just showed how drawn I was to aviation and aeroplanes, so to speak. And from that point, it just became more and more of an interest.
So it wasn't about, we all have that dream. I definitely wanted to be an air hostess, definitely. We all had that, right? Because we like the uniform, we like the hair, we like the whole look and serving people. So there's a whole dream for many people, but there's the pilot and there's also the air hostess. So was yours part of the whole being in the uniform, or was it just, I want the engineering part and the mechanical part of a plane? How does it work? Was it like that?
I think in a way, but I think for me it was rather the intrigue of, you know, the industry, you know, what it takes to be a pilot. You know, the different elements, for example, like the uniform, the training and all that, that came in later. But initially it was just, you know, I was very curious as how does that machine stay up in the air, you know? How do they do it? And I was quite keen on learning, you know, how the magic happens. So I think for me, that was the initial drive towards the industry. Then, you know, the other elements came in later on, and I even found it more exciting.
And you've talked about the transition from being a pilot and the challenges of, I have to call it the back end. How have you managed that, though? Was it seamless for you because you knew the front end and you could manage the back?
To be honest, I think it was a seamless transition in the sense that we had quite a robust handover process from my predecessor. So, It was quite a straightforward process, but I had enough time to learn from the person who was in the job before me.
Yes.
So I think that gave me a good platform to adjust, you know, to the new environment. But it did have, you know, its own fair share of difficulties here and there.
And then how do you balance now the role of being in administration to being, can I call it customer facing? You're not really customer facing, but you're serving the customer because you're flying the customer.
Indeed. You'll find I'm a very hands-on type of person. Mm. I think my leadership style is to be hands-on. So in that sense, I maintained my pilot's license. I'm an active, training captain on our flagship, aircraft, the CRJ 100 and 200. So the interesting part is for a pilot to remain current or to remain safe on line operations, you need to do a minimum of 3 takeoffs and landings within a space of 90 days. So I see to it that I do a minimum of 3 takeoffs and landings within the 90 days.
So solo? Does it have to be solo?
No. It has to be with another pilot.
Right.
It has to be with another pilot. Obviously, safety comes into play.
Yeah.
So it cannot be solo. It has to be with another pilot.
And obviously, safety now has taken a whole new level over the last maybe 10 years from customer facing as well as, you know, administrative. How do you feel about how ProFlight is taking safety?
I think it's not only safety, but there's also a strong element or attribute of quality.
Yeah.
So I think the safety and quality element go together. And what ProFlight does is we don't pull any stops when it comes to safety and quality. Mm-hmm. So we have a very robust safety management system within the airline, which keeps evolving. And the system was really tested, you know, during the COVID pandemic.
Mm.
And it kept evolving even then to stay in tandem with what, you know, the best industry practice was at the time and what other airlines had adopted. So I think, you know, the safety element is very good for any airline. And as ProFlight, we've adopted the safety and quality element quite strongly. And we can see the results now.
So tell me, there's so much fascination. I tell you what it is about pilots, right? People think that they're people that you can't talk to. So now we can, because you're not an official pilot at the moment, so we can talk to you now. And people, there's a fascination that you can't really talk to the pilot and, you know, they're like prestigious. So you can now tell me, do pilots really have the best view of the world up there?
Absolutely. I'll give you a perfect example.
Yeah.
A few weeks ago, I was doing a flight into Cape Town and the weather was brilliant. The visibility was good. You could see all the way from Cape Town to Lusaka if you had good eyesight. So just the view of the Table Mountain, you know, the topography, the city, it was quite an amazing view. And it was a reminder to me as to why I chose aviation.
Right.
Because you don't get to see that every day.
No,
you know?
That's beautiful.
And you can't explain it to somebody who hasn't really had the opportunity of seeing that view, you know?
Yeah.
It's actually quite a privilege.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, that must be amazing because you must see so many sights, so many views, and it may be difficult to explain. But of course, now we can't even join the pilots up front because we used to have that privilege at some point.
Exactly.
And get a sticker in our book as children or even adults.
Exactly.
I've flown up there. So tell me about you obviously fly locally a lot. What's your, in flying in Zambia, what's your best landing or takeoff view or position, like from which city, town?
I think it has to be Livingston for obvious reason, because you get an amazing view of the Victoria Falls, both during the approach and landing and also on the takeoff. And every now and then, if we are ahead of schedule, we can ask, air traffic control to do a fly past the Victoria Falls, which is good for the passengers as well.
Absolutely.
Because they get to have an amazing view of, the Victoria Falls. So for me, definitely has to be Livingston.
So I was also going to ask you, what's your best part of the cockpit? But it must just be having the control. Not the control, but having the ability to maybe share your experience with the passengers.
Indeed, but you'll find for me, I I really enjoy talking to the passengers. So I think for me, the best part of the flight is when I get to welcome the passengers on board, when I give them an update of the flight once we're on the cruise. And then when we point out, for example, between Lusaka and Johannesburg, we normally point out, the flight over the Lake Kariba. And we tell the passengers this is the official crossover point into the Zimbabwean airspace.
Yes.
Then when we fly past Bulawayo, we do the same. So for me, it's that part of just keeping the passengers in the loop. I really enjoy that.
No, as passengers, we really enjoy being updated and being talked to, I have to say.
I think it also does show that the crew are interested in keeping the passengers in the loop.
And also the professionalism
exactly,
as well.
Exactly.
You know,
exactly.
Passengers always love that.
Exactly.
When did you take your first solo flight? Was it 20 years ago when you suddenly
Ooh, that's an interesting question. And you can stop me at any moment because this question gets me going. So it was exactly 20 years ago here in Zambia at a place called Zambia Air Services Training Institute. So I did my ab initio pilot's course there before I moved to South Africa. The interesting part with a solo flight is your instructor doesn't actually tell you that you're going solo today.
What?
You don't know when it's going to happen.
No.
No, they don't tell you.
Alone?
They don't tell you. Yes, they don't
no.
tell you. So you just keep training, And then on that morning, I remember it was a Wednesday morning in July. That was in 2002, I believe. So
how old were you? Oh, around. You don't need to.
I was very young.
That's
I was very young.
Okay.
I was very, very young.
But I also say I'm young right now. Okay, that's okay.
I was very young. I was below 21. I was very young.
Wow.
Yeah, I was very young. I was still a kid. A
wow.
kid with a dream and a passion for aviation. So we went up, did some training. Then suddenly the instructor looks at me and says, Walu, I've taught you everything I know. It's now your turn to put everything into practice. Don't be afraid. I just need you to do just one circuit around the airport and you'll be fine. If you feel you're getting nervous, just remember what I've been telling you. So he left the aircraft and I got onto the radio and told the tower. I said, tower, listen, this is my first solo. So please do look after me. And they said, no, don't worry. We've been doing this for years. So I went off, lined up on the runway. And I did actually touch the seat to make sure the instructor wasn't there. And it was quite an amazing experience because now without the instructor sitting on the light aircraft, it became even lighter. So
right.
when I took off, I was actually amazed at how much performance this aircraft had because now I was alone on the aircraft. And from there, my career just went like, to different heights.
So yeah. this is it.
Yeah.
How do they assess you on a solo flight? Is this just the fact they can't assess you whilst you're in? Or maybe how you talk to the control towers or how you take off. How do they assess you?
So the objective of the solo flight basically is to build your confidence.
Yes.
Because ultimately you're being trained to fly maybe in a small bush aircraft somewhere in Africa or in Europe. So the whole idea is to train you to be confident, to show you that you can do it. You know, what you've learned can be applied, you know, to flying solo and all that. So there is a strict criteria in place. So the instructor will be looking for certain attributes. He or she will be looking for a performance. There will be mistakes during the training, but the instructor wants to see how you recover from the mistakes.
All right.
That's it. So as you do the solo, the control tower will be monitoring you and obviously passing on the information to the instructor. Say, no, don't worry about your student. He or she is okay. And they're almost landing. And the interesting part is as soon as you land, then there's like this ritual where you get off the aircraft and then the flight school members come through with buckets of water. Then before you know it, you're like drenched in water and all that. So quite an experience.
Have you done a solo flight since ever again?
I did plenty. Plenty thereafter. I did plenty. I did an interesting one. I flew an aircraft from Spain all the way to South Africa.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so it was quite an experience.
Wow.
Yeah, quite an experience. And it's on these flights when you really get to reflect upon your life and where you are and your goals and objectives. So it's quite a privilege to be in the industry.
Just, you know, the idea of being literally in the air with maybe hours of it's not like you don't need to focus, of course you do, but hours of reflection, actually, even as you're flying, this must be beautiful.
It is, it is. And, you know, the one quality you have up in the cockpit and in the air is it's very quiet.
Yes.
So silent. You get to a point where you've exhausted all conversations with your colleague on the flight deck. So eventually you'll be like, nah, I'm just taking 5 minutes just to think about one or two things. And he or she will be like, yeah, sure, I'm doing the same. So that is when you get to reflect. And it's quite an amazing experience, actually.
I should imagine
It's an amazing experience. And believe it or not, I've actually had some of my best ideas as a director of flight operations from sitting up there in the cockpit.
I can imagine.
Yeah.
I can imagine. Yeah. Tell me a little bit about, so I'm going to tell you a little bit about what I know about flying. So my dad owned a plane at the flying club. He owned a plane. It's still there. It was bought by somebody renowned.
Okay.
And he used to fly us around Lusaka. At the time, I wasn't even petrified. It was like, yeah, you know, let's go to the flying club. And, you know, he'd fly us around the Lusaka and like, that's Homo, that's Granny's, that's your aunt. That's like, oh, perfect. What I know now is that I would never jump in a plane with my dad, right? Oh, you don't know he's there. But if, with what I know, I'd never have done that. It was like a fun thing. He was young. He was full of energy and that sort of thing. How has a Zambian, this was 50 years ago. How has the aviation industry grown for us in Zambia?
I think it's a twofold, you know, response in the sense that, you know, there's a private side of the industry and of course the commercial side.
Yeah.
The private side, I would say, has actually taken a few steps back. Nowadays, if you go to the airport, there are very few individuals who own aircraft specifically just for leisure. You know, I think that part of the industry has kind of, you know, died, so to speak. So I think it's a pity because I'd really love to see that side of the industry beginning to flourish. We have maybe more doctors and lawyers flying, you know, as a hobby. You know, maybe if a lawyer has a court case in Ndola, he could just jump on his single engine aircraft and then fly to Ndola. But on the commercial side, I think the growth has been exponential.
Yeah.
Primarily, the infrastructure within the country has really taken a serious upgrade because in order for the industry to grow, we need support from, you know, the various stakeholders and players in the industry. So you find the infrastructure within the country has really been revamped.
Yeah.
A good example. Ndola, Simon Mwansa Kapwepwe International Airport. That's a greenfield airport, you know, built from scratch.
Can it take like a 380?
Well, there are very few airports in the world that can take a 380, but it can take up to like maybe a 747. So that's not bad.
Yeah,
that's not bad. Yeah, that's not bad. It can take quite a number of large aircraft.
Okay.
Yeah, so there's been a lot of growth on the commercial side. Obviously, some airlines have come in and some have gone bust and all that.
Yeah.
You know, so it's a difficult industry to be in, actually.
It's a very difficult industry.
Yeah.
And there's some, well, I think we both know this, that the airlines that have survived have had the money that's been, they've had money pumped in. It's a very difficult industry to manage.
Exactly.
I think Air ProFlight are doing an amazing job at having kept their role local and regional now. And I think it's just about staying focused and staying like, this is what we're good at. And we grow and we've established ourselves. I'm just presuming we grow as we establish ourselves and know how good we are at this and then grow steadily, actually. It's about growing steadily. I think some of the airlines have grown too fast and kind of gone bust because of that. It's an interesting, they say that the airline, health, and education industries are all equally as very complex.
Exactly.
They carry the same complexities.
Exactly.
Or similar complexities, those three industries.
Exactly.
Yeah.
No, the growth within ProFlight has been very steady.
Yeah.
And just to, you know, give you an idea, in 2022, we flew less than 200,000 passengers. Okay, obviously that was just after the recovery from COVID.
Yeah.
So the industry was still reeling from the you know, the after effects of the pandemic. But in 2023, we flew over 279,000 passengers. which was quite a big jump. It was a record for ProFlight. And this year, we're looking at breaking that number.
Awesome.
Yeah, we're looking at breaking that number. So awesome. It just shows you that the growth is there. It's been happening.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think, you know, having opened up Cape Town is just amazing. There's an appetite. And I think part of what you have as an industry, you have to understand the appetite of your passengers. Those are, you know, because it's a difference between a half day into Cape Town or a full day into Cape Town, because you'd have to go to Joburg and out. And I think you've cracked that one.
Exactly. Yeah. No, the appetite is there because remember, initially we just had the Lusaka Cape Town flight.
Yeah.
But eventually we realized that there was a demand for Livingstone Cape Town.
And, yes.
And we have also seen that, you know, the appetite is on both ends of the flight,
yep.
Both on the Zambian side and both on the South African side. Yeah, no. So this route is a game changer. And I think it also further strengthens, you know, the bilateral ties between Zambia and South Africa.
No, and also I think you're doing a great job in just in terms of, you know, supporting the tourism industry as ProFlight. It's just amazing.
Exactly.
We still sit in such a gem as Zambia and people still look at us having, you know, one of the most amazing stories to tell in terms of our wildlife and obviously Victoria Falls. And it's just a beautiful place, but you're really playing a great role in supporting that as ProFlight. So do you work closely with the Ministry of Tourism?
We do. Yeah. We do work very closely with the Ministry of Tourism and Transport because the two aligned ministries, you know, cover aviation. So we work very closely with them. And when it comes to certain incentives and initiatives and all that, we are always collaborating with the two ministries. Because you'll find in aviation or any other industry, I think stakeholder collaboration is key.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. So tell me, what's your dream? Can I call it dream plane, dream line, dream? What's your dream plane to fly that you haven't flown before?
Well, growing up in the industry, there was quite, you know, that drive towards the Concorde.
Yes.
You know, the Concorde was the only supersonic, you know, passenger aircraft that ever existed. So I was quite mesmerized by the speed and the fact that, you know, you can fly from New York to, you know, the UK in a couple of hours.
Yeah.
You know, in under 3 hours.
Like, I'm on the red eye.
Yeah. But eventually when I grew up, I thought, you know what, there's more to aviation than having a dream aircraft. I think now for me, it's more of maybe having a positive contribution to the industry, you know. And by that, I mean maybe helping, you know, young and upcoming aviators in the industry.
I really want to learn about that because what's the appetite now for the young potential pilot? Have they still got the appetite now? Are we competing with, like, I want to be a lawyer, I want to be an accountant? We're filled with lawyers, that's for sure. What's the appetite and how do you entice young people to join the industry?
The appetite is definitely there, but there are two major constraints when it comes to, you know, training for pilots. So the first one is currently we don't have a proper, you know, pilot training facility in the country.
Why?
Just, you know, resources. You know, it costs a lot. And also the aviation fuel is not a cheap product to, you know, to acquire. So as a result, the only training facility we had in Zambia went to a state where they can't even, you know, produce, you know, private pilots.
So are most potential, two things, are most potential pilots going out of the country? And for that reason, you probably have to be quite well resourced.
Correct.
Right.
So I was going to say the next difficulty with, you know, training as a pilot is the cost. It's a cost prohibitive industry to be in. So you find if anyone in Zambia wants to be a pilot, they have to go maybe to South Africa or Ethiopia or maybe the US. So I think the cost element makes it quite, you know, a difficult undertaking for most people.
Of course.
Yes.
Yeah, that's sad, but I'm sure that it's, well, hopefully something that's being looked into. I mean, for our young dreamers.
And as ProFlight, I can proudly say we're working on a project where we would open up a sponsorship, you know, a deal to some young Zambians.
Oh,
who
right.
would have the qualifications, the attributes, the skills.
What are qualifications, by the way?
Just a good, you know, education. Good education, you know, being of sound character and mind, you know, being level-headed, being patient. And one of the attributes actually to being a good pilot is being time conscious.
Thank you very much for that, Captain Walu, because you did turn up rather early.
I'm hinting at something here.
I said, the captain, he's there. Yeah.
So we will soon be launching that project just to get maybe more young Zambians involved in aviation, not only to get them into ProFlight, you know, for them to have jobs, but also to strengthen the industry. I think this will be one way of looking at it from a corporate social responsibility aspect.
That's awesome. Yeah. And now tell me, if you weren't a pilot, what else would you have been?
Interesting question. So I grew up in a home with a police officer. My father was originally a police officer. So absolutely, the discipline and just the uniform, you know, and he polished his shoes like over and over again. So I think if it weren't for being a pilot, I would be a police officer, definitely.
Definitely. Not a traffic police officer.
Please. No, definitely not. Definitely not.
Thank you.
Definitely not. I think I'm more on the practical and the hands-on, you know, side of things. So traffic wouldn't work for me. Yeah.
No,
I'd probably be like a paramilitary officer or something.
There we go.
No, being hands-on, you know, chasing after the bad guys.
Oh my goodness. I think totally thankful to hear the voice behind the wheel. As passengers, as friends, as partners with Nkwazi, really thankful for the work that you're doing at ProFlight. We think it's amazing. And I'm very grateful that you have got a foresight for future pilots. And I think you're doing a great job. And thank you for joining me today.
Thank you. I think it was a pleasure, honor, and a delight to be with you today. And who knows, you might just hear this voice on one of the flights to Cape Town or Livingston.
I can't come to the front and say, I know you. I have to wait. No, that's awesome. Indeed. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Pleasure is all mine.
All right. Okay. Thank you.
So I think this has been an interesting experience for me this afternoon to share my thoughts and experiences within the industry. Obviously, ProFlight, we are a game changer when it comes to the aviation industry in Zambia. And hopefully, going forward, I think we'd love to see more and more positive changes. Not only in aviation, but also in the tourism industry as a whole. And it's an exciting moment for me. And I truly hope that this interview will shed more light into my experiences and just what the aviation industry is all about. But overall, it was a delight to be part of this wonderful interview.
So that was my session with Captain Walu, as he likes to be referred to. Really awesome. I've learned so much. And even behind the scenes, we're going to share a few stories. But I hope it actually encourages all of us, especially our children, to join the aviation industry, because the world is quite small now and it's possible to choose so many careers. But as Zambia, we definitely need men and women to join this industry. That's the message I got from this, and I'm absolutely loving it. Have a great day.